A few years ago, we grew and sold a business that forever changed our lives. At first, we really struggled trying to figure out which tools to use to help run and organize our community. But that all changed once we discovered Kajabi. Kajabi is the ultimate all-in-one platform that helps creators and entrepreneurs build successful online businesses by unlocking predictable, recurring revenue. No matter your niche, Kajabi makes it easy to turn your skills, passions, and experiences into enriching online courses, exclusive membership sites, subscription podcasts, thriving communities, personalized coaching, and more. The best part, Kajabi doesn't take a cut of your revenue because everything is owned and controlled by you, so you keep 100% of what you earn. And with Kajabi, you also get robust analytics, easy payment options, email marketing tools, and customizable website templates all built in. You don't need a huge audience to make sustainable income. There are thousands of creators on Kajabi making six and seven figures with less than 50,000 followers. Right now, Kajabi is offering a free 30-day trial to start your business if you go to kajabi.com/MU. That's kajabi.com/MU. Go to kajabi.com/MU and join the creators and entrepreneurs who have made over $7 billion.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Take all the marketing stuff that you've already done that's two pages too long. Take all of the emails that you've sent that kind of describe what you do or the proposal that you sent. Stick it in ChatGPT and then let ChatGPT give me two sentences to explain what this is. And ChatGPT will give you a really good answer for this without any fuss at all.
Hey there, and welcome to the Millionaire University Podcast. I am Brian Guerin, and today I am joined by Sean O'Shaughnessy of New Sales Expert. He is a top-tier fractional VP of sales and has been running his business for a handful of years now at an extremely high level. And you may recall, Sean has joined us in the past on the MU podcast. So if you look back in the archives to episode 53, I had him on to share his tactics when it comes to his superpower, one of his superpowers, which is teaching us how to network like a boss. But today we're really hitting his sweet spot of sales and talking about how you can be a master of your sales domain in your business. And we're going to do that by talking about the sales fundamentals that every business owner should adopt. Sales can be scary. It is scary. I remember when I started out my business, it was the number one thing that I was most frightened about. And honestly, I do not consider myself a sales expert. And I don't think that it's something that's uncommon when you're starting out your business, but it is something that will become commonplace as a business owner. You always have to be selling or else you will not have new sales coming in. It's common sense, right? So I want to jump right in with Sean talking about the sales fundamentals that every business owner should adopt. This is part of a four-part series. I'm super stoked that we're breaking this up because we have so much valuable information to share with you. And today we're really going to hit on part one, where we establish the foundation. Amongst the things we're going to talk about are understanding your sales process, identifying your target market, and crafting a value proposition. These are the base level fundamentals that you need, regardless of where you are in your business, whether you're brand new, you haven't started yet, you're brand new, or you're just beginning or at the beginning of your journey. These steps are absolute musts. So let's jump right in. Let's hear from the expert himself, Sean O'Shaughnessy. Sean, we're going to just jump right in here.
So one of the things I do want to make sure everybody understands, even though we're going to do a four-part series, we're going to talk for quite a bit of time here. It takes a lifetime to get great at sales. And I say that it takes a lifetime is because nobody ever truly gets there. It's one of those things that you aspire to. It's one of those things that you work on constantly. However, teaching somebody how to be great at sales takes years or decades. And that's why I typically tell owners, don't worry about the industry that the salesperson that you're about ready to hire comes from. Worry about if they can sell. because it's harder to teach sales than it is to teach your industry. So you're not going to be an expert after this four-part series, but you might have some ideas on things to implement, things to do, some best practices. But remember, you're always going to get better. You always have to keep on trying. You don't just follow a recipe and there it is. There is no silver bullet or magic bullet in sales. The only silver bullet is you have to work hard at it. So that's the only thing that's constant among all sales systems, among everybody that's good at sales, is if they work hard at it, they will get good at it. If they don't work hard at it, they probably won't be.
And we should probably preface this with the fact that selling never stops. And if you are a business owner, if you intend to be a business owner, you're planning on opening a business, you are a salesman or saleswoman because the sales never stops. It is the lifeblood of your business. And I can tell you from personal experience, I avoided sales as hard as I could because I thought I was a bad salesman. I don't know how to sell. I can't do that. I can't walk into high pressure scenarios and sell people on my service. No. It doesn't work that way. It does work that way in a sense that you have to be selling and you have to get out of your own way. It's scary at first, right, Sean? But with the proper training and honestly, at the end of the day, with the continuation of reps, getting in your reps, just like if you're a baseball player, football player, or whatever, you don't get better without the reps. And sales is no different. So I just want to make sure we say that sales never quits. And if you don't do it, you will not grow. So let's get that bugaboo out of the way first. It is something you're going to have to tackle. And that's what we're going to try and help you out with today. Sean, I'm going to hand it back to you.
That's fantastic. And I'm going to build on that sports metaphor that you just used, Brian. And I'm going to take everybody back. Maybe I'm not taking them back too far because I don't know everybody in the listening audience, obviously. But do you remember when you were watching a five-year-old soccer game? So maybe you didn't have five-year-olds, maybe you did, but inevitably you try to get involved in soccer and you would go to the soccer game and it was called cluster ball, right? So all of the kids would be clustered around the soccer ball and they would kick it and the ball would scoot out and then all the kids would run to the soccer ball again. Then they kick, boom, it would go out. And then all the kids would run to it again. And finally it would go out of bounds or go in the goal, right? One of the two things would happen. But, you know, when you watched professional soccer guys and they're kicking the ball backwards and forwards and across the field and doing passes and doing cuts, that doesn't happen when you're 5 years old.
Right.
Right. It's cluster ball. It really is cluster ball. It's like a bunch of bees going around the flower all the time. That's what sales is when it's unorganized. That's what sales is when you don't have a selling process, when you don't have a sales process, because all you're doing is the ball's in front of you and you kick it. You're not even sure which direction you're kicking it. You're not sure that you're making progress. You're definitely not passing it. The very first thing you have to understand about sales is you need a sales process. Now, most people will say that there are probably 6 to 8 steps in a sales process. And I'm not going to argue which one's right and all the rest. I'll give you the high level of sales process, just the very high level. And it should be a series of stages that get you from a lead, somebody that's a name that you just met, that you don't even know if they're qualified, all the way to an order. There's a series of steps that happen. So let's just talk about that on a high level. And I think later when we, in the series, we're going to talk about CRMs. This sales process should be embedded into your CRM system. But let's just talk about what the sales process is, because that's the most important thing if you don't want to be a fifth grade soccer player. Or if, I'm sorry, a five-year-old soccer player. I said fifth grade.
That probably happens in fifth grade too.
It probably happens in fifth grade. You're right. The first thing that you'll have is a lead. So you have a name, you have a person, you have a company, whatever, whoever you're selling to, but it's nothing. It is a name. It is, we don't know if they're qualified. We don't know anything about them. We don't know if they have a problem that we can solve. They don't know if they have a problem that we can solve because they don't know what we do. But that's where everything starts. This next step is we got to get to know them a little bit. So that's step number one, lead. Step number two, got to get to know them a little bit. So you have to qualify them. You have to have a conversation with them. You can call this step the qualification step. You can call it the discovery step, whatever you want to call it. I really don't care. It's all the same. In that second step, you are going to get to know them. You are going to talk to them a little bit. You are going to evaluate where they're at. So in sales, there's this concept of What is there as is and what is there to be? So during the discovery step or the getting to know them step, you're trying to figure out where are they? What's going on right now in their world? What are the problems? How are they working? And I don't know what you sell, obviously, so you might sell a variety of things, but where are they today? Find out what's going on. And then also try to figure out where would they like to be? Now, there's two types of sales. Those two types are the customer knows where they want to be, or the customer doesn't know where they want to be. And so if we break it out just that simply, in that qualification step or that get to know them step, we're trying to figure out, do we need to be aspirational to them that they can get there? In which case we're talking about nirvana. We're talking about how great it could be once they're a customer of yours, right? We're trying to establish their to be significantly above or away from where their as is right now. What's going on today? But you know, Mr. Customer, you could be here. Now that's aspirational. But they may have come to you and say, this is broken. I need to get better. And so they know where their to be is. They may not have a great to be. You may need to put it out farther, but at least they know what's going on. Now, here's the issue. If you don't establish that delta of where they are compared to where they need to be, then you aren't going to get a deal. Because people only spend money when the where they want to be is different from where they are. And the pain of getting there is something that is exceeds the challenge of just getting there, right? So the harder it is to get there, the more less likely they are to do it. So it has to be a good step, an easy step. They have to buy something from you to make that step happen. And so it has to be obvious in your value proposition, which we'll talk about in a little bit, has to be clear in how that's going to happen. But you have to establish that as is and that to be. So you've done that. So that's step number two. And I'll assume that most people are selling to companies, but that may not be the case. So in a B2B world, business to business world, you're going to have to talk to somebody that has the ability to spend money. Now, that may not be the person you're talking to. And this is a mistake that many, many, many salespeople, even after many years of doing sales, they make this mistake. They make the mistake of, well, I'm talking to this person and he's answering all my questions or she's answering all my questions. We're having a great conversation. And she says she is empowered to make this decision. Well, you know what? Anybody that says I'm empowered to make this decision probably is not.
That is so true. Oh my gosh. I can't tell you how many times that I've experienced that, and you are dead right.
Yeah, right. And that even happens a little bit if you're doing consumer sales. You're talking to somebody, and then if you're selling it for a while, and then they go, well, I got to go talk to my wife, or I got to go talk to my husband. Well, guess what? You're no longer talking to somebody that is empowered to make that decision. You're talking to somebody who is gathering information to give to the person that's empowered. And maybe it's in the case of a B2C, whether it's a husband and wife kind of going back and forth on that, maybe it's a we decision. But the reality is, if you're not talking to the person that is the destination of, I have to go talk to X, then you're probably not talking to the right person. You need to talk to that person.
Right. The person who can sign the check, that's who the target needs to be.
Exactly right. And in businesses, that probably means, depending on how much the thing you're selling, that probably means that the person you talk to probably cannot make a decision that is more than double their salary. Just a rule of thumb. If you're selling something and it's double what they pay for, what they get paid to work for that company every year, then they probably cannot sign for it. That just is a good rule of thumb. Some companies won't let you even sign for your own salary, but almost definitely 2X your salary, yeah, you're not making this decision. It's going to go to somebody else.
That's if you're selling a product that is at least two times that decision maker's income, right?
Correct. At that point, they're not a decision maker anymore.
Right.
Very few companies grant the ability to make a decision for double. Now, you might say, wait a second, I sell to a buyer. And buyers are different. Buyers and organizations, they never spend their own money. They aren't granted the ability to do anything. They are granted the ability to spend somebody else's money. That's what buyers do. So somebody else's budget is then transferred to the buyer so he can spend against it. So what we need to do is we want to talk to the economic buyer, the true person that can truly sign off on this. In many cases, that means you're probably talking to a VP. You're probably not talking to a director at that company. You're probably talking to a VP. You might be talking to somebody with a C in their title, like a COO or CFO, CEO. Just think of your own company for those people who are listening out there. If you have employees, can they really spend $200,000, $400,000 for what you sell? They probably can't. They probably need to talk to you, the owner of the company, assuming you're the owner. They probably need to you to make that kind of a commitment. Even if it's a, you know, it's only going to cost us so much a month, but we have to sign up for 1 year. Well, how much is that 1 year commitment? That's really what you're trying to figure out how to pull off. And it probably takes a owner of the company, a CEO of the company, somebody that reports to the board of directors. So anybody with a C in the title. It might, depending on what you sell and how big the company is, it might have to go to a VP, senior VP, executive VP, whatever. So the bigger the company that you're selling to, the more likely the person you are talking to on the first conversation is not the economic buyer. They may say, I have the right to make this decision. What they're really saying 9 times out of 10 is I have the right to make a decision to recommend to the economic buyer that we're going to buy this thing. Which means, yes, their input's very important. You don't ignore that person, but you still need to get to the economic buyer. So by the way, that's the third step in the process. We have to talk to the economic buyer because we have to be able to say to the economic buyer, Mr. Economic Buyer or Mrs. Economic Buyer, I understand you're here. This is your as is. And I understand you want to get to this to be. Is that true? Because I don't know, maybe he doesn't agree with the person you've been talking to, right? You got to kind of confirm that. Let's say they say yes. If they don't say no, you got to start selling, right? But you got to go back to that qualification step. But if they do say yes, then you got to go, okay, what do I need to do to show you that my product will get you from here to there, from where your as is today to where your to be is tomorrow? What do I have to do to convince you? And the economic buyer may list a whole bunch of things that your qualification customer, the step two qualification decision was like, oh, you only have to do this and this. You talk to the economic buyer and goes, no, you have to pass a quality test. You have to have enough money in the bank to be able to buy a bond to support this, whatever the case may be. There will be additional qualification steps that you have to jump through for the economic buyer to say, yes, if you do all these things, I will buy. And that's really what you want that. Step three, economic buyer, that's really what you want to get there.
For the B2C, so a small business serving, could be a homeowner. Maybe it's B2B, but it's not, you know, like just from my experience, a marketing agency servicing another business or a lawn care company servicing a homeowner. I think those concepts still apply, right? Where it's now, instead of selling to a large company or, you know, a C-suite type of company, now you're selling to a homeowner. But you still have to, A, convince them that you're sell them on your service. But B, a lot of times you run into, well, you're talking to the wife, but she needs to go check with the husband or vice versa. Or the husband says, hey, I got to run this past my wife. She's the CFO. How does that apply on a smaller scale?
Almost everybody wants to go talk it over with somebody else, and they're not going to say no, yes or no. They may say no all by themselves, but they probably aren't going to say yes all by themselves. If you're selling B2C, especially if it's a significant transaction. So I'm not talking about I'm selling books, right? And I'm going to sell you a book for $12.95. Okay. So the individual can buy that just fine based on whatever the money they have in their wallet. But if I'm selling like a lawn care service or the guy who comes in and mulches my yard, and I don't do mulch anymore, in case you haven't seen me online, I am way too old to bend over and do mulch. So I don't do mulch anymore. I used to when I was young and when I had kids living with me, but now they've all left and they leave me all by myself as I get older, and I don't do mulch. So I have a lot of gardens in my yard. So it costs $1,000, $1,500. Actually, I don't remember how much I pay, but I pay a lot of money every year to put mulch down in my yard. We don't make that decision. The first person that walks up doesn't get that business. The first person that walks up, well, we're going to say, well, let me think about it. Let me talk it over to my wife, or my wife will say, let me talk it over to my husband, because then we have to say, well, what about the guy who did it last year? Should we hire him back? Because he kind of did a good job, or he did a lousy job, right? One of the two. And in that case, there's still going to be a question of, well, what do we have to do to prove that we can do this? Well, can you tell me about some of my neighbors that use your service? That would be a legitimate thing. And the economic buyer is going to ask that question. Give me a reference that shows me that you can do this. Give me some proof that we're going to do this. And I just said kind of the next step. And that is, what is the proof step? So the proof step is always the fourth step in this scenario, at least. There can be other steps in the way, but at a high level, the fourth step is the proof step. And that is, prove it to me that it works. Now, that prove it to me was something that you established on step two when you're qualifying, because you're going to ask that question, what do I need to do? And then you're going to ask again of the economic buyer, the person actually is going to write the check. You say, what do I need to do to prove it to you that I'm good for this, that my product will get you from your as is to your to be, that goal of what you want to do? What do I need to do? And some people say it's a proof of concept, and it's not a proof of concept. It's a proof of value. So I'm going to prove in that fourth step, I'm going to prove out the value that I bring so that you know that it'll work. Because I already know it works. I'm the salesperson. I already know that it works. I'm not proving anything out to myself. I'm proving it out to you, my customer. So it's a proof of value. So what is that proof of value? In the case of the guy putting mulch down, you know, maybe it's references. Maybe it's he can show me insurance certificates, whatever the case may be. And maybe because he did my yard last year, maybe that proof statement, I already have that proof statement. He proved it out last year, and that's perfectly fine as well. But there's always a proof to take me from where I am today, which is a bunch of gardens that need to have compost in them or need to have mulch on them, to, you know, let's get mulch on them, right? So, and there's all this pain that I have to go through to do it. And you got to build that up when you're talking to the qualification step. And you have to build that up when you're talking to the economic buyer. However, the proof is, yes, I can do it. And yes, I can do it at the time that we commit. And that kind of leads us to the next step. So that proof statement leads us to the fifth step in the process. The fifth step in the process is the verification of details, or negotiation step is also kind of what it can be called. And that is, okay, I'm going to do this. I'm going to deliver mulch to you. I'm going to install it. And I'm going to do it by this date. And I'm going to charge you this much. And I'm going to go, whoa, 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 whoa. Last year, you charged me X, and now you're charging me Y. What's the difference there? Let's negotiate that a little bit. Or maybe, you know, I have a party coming up on this date. I need you to squeeze me in before that. That's a verification step. I mean, that's not a verification step. That is a figuring out the details, right? Identifying the details, locking those things in. That's the fifth step of the process, where we're going to really kind of hone in on exactly what we're going to deliver, exactly what price, exactly what time frame. And then the sixth step is sitting back and saying, give me the order. It's the close. That's the sixth step of the sales process. Now, that I just described the simplest process that can be six steps. It's kind of minimum of what everything is. You can throw some other things in there that might be unique to your industry or unique to your product that you sell. But those are the six steps that pretty much everybody can agree on. You got to go through those six steps. Your sales process is designed to go from one to the other to the other. So if we go back to the analogy of the soccer kids, now we're passing from one player to the next player to the next player. We are running a play. So if you're playing basketball, if you're playing football, whatever your sport of choice is, there's always a do this, then do this, then do this, then do this. Then we score, then we win. That's exactly what the sales process is. If you think of it in that way, and we're going to do all of these steps along the way, and we're going to identify those steps. The very first thing that every company needs to get good at is understanding that there is a sales process. And we're going to take people through that sales process. And I don't care if you're selling B2C, as long as you're selling something more significant than $12.95 book.
That's fantastic. Successful businesses are built on the back of systems and processes. Every section of your business needs to have a system and a process, and none more important than that sales process, because that's what makes the cash register ring. When that process is humming along, it's like a flywheel, which I know I've discussed on past episodes. When you have that flywheel going, it self-perpetuates. And when you have that running with sales, now you're cooking with peanut oil.
Shopify has already taken the cash register online, helping millions sell billions around the world. But did you know that Shopify can do the same thing at your retail store? Give your point of sale system a serious upgrade with Shopify. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store, from accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/MU, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/MU to take your retail business to the next level today. Shopify.com/MU.
More and more entrepreneurs and investors are discovering the awesome franchise opportunities that exist across a variety of industries. Franchising can simply be the better path, and interest in franchising is at an all-time high. Lucky for you, John Ostenson, founder of FranBridge Consulting and a past Millionaire University guest, is here to help you explore the premier franchise opportunities today. John and his FranBridge Consulting team are part of the largest franchise brokerage in the U.S. and have vetted the market thoroughly. FranBridge is hands down the premier source for the best opportunities in the franchise world, including both active and passive opportunities. From tiny homes to youth soccer to industrial hoses to pets, senior care to mental health, and more. John has served as an Inc. 500 franchisor and is a multi-brand franchisee himself. And he does more placements than anyone else in the country. Sign up for a free consultation call with John today or get a free copy of his book, Non-Food Franchising, at FranBridgeConsulting.com. That's FranBridgeConsulting.com. Available in the U.S. and Canada.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Exactly right. Because the cool thing is now you can look at all your steps of your sales process. We're going to talk about this when we do our CRM conversation later on. But all of those sales processes, how many customers do I have in each stage of that process? If you always want to have a constant number of orders, then you have to have a constant number of people in each one of those. And your time in each one is going to be kind of the same or going to average out. So you're going to be able to do some analysis. Well, once again, we'll talk about that when we talk about CRM. I think we're going to do that in our third episode.
Wonderful, wonderful. I'm pumped for that. Let's move it on to identifying your target market. This is one of the massive parts of establishing the foundation when it comes to sales fundamentals for your business. So, Sean, what do we want to talk about when it comes to identifying your target market?
If I'm selling mulch, so we'll go back to that very same analogy we just used a second ago. If I'm selling mulch, then I'm probably not going to call on somebody that lives in a condo or lives in an apartment. Definitely not somebody that's going to live in an apartment because he's probably not making that decision to pay for mulch being applied, right? Even the condo owner probably doesn't make a decision about putting mulch down on the ground around the building, right? The building owner does, right? So if I'm selling mulch, I have to make sure that I'm calling on people that have mulch problems. And, you know, I'm probably calling on people that are old enough that it hurts to get down and put down mulch, like me. I'm probably not going to have a great deal of success calling on the young couple, 25 years old, 28 years old, just bought their first house. They're gung-ho to do some yard work. They're not going to pay for somebody else to do mulch. Maybe they are, but it's not a perfect target market.
Yeah, if you're calling me Sean, I'm telling you to take a hike because my yard is my baby.
There you go. And that's the other thing, right? The guy that, you know, when they drive by and say, you know, he is spending 2 hours a weekend, every weekend working on his yard and he loves it. He's out there pulling up weeds by hand. He's out there filling in the spots with grass seed. He loves it. And there's people like that. My neighbor, three doors down, the man's getting close to 75 years old now. He loves his yard. He's retired. And so he goes out there and he's fiddling with it. In the fall, a leaf doesn't stay on his grass more than a day. It's off. He gets them all off, right? He has the most perfect yard in the subdivision. He does not pay for a crew to come in to do his mulch because his mulch has to be perfectly aligned. I wouldn't be surprised if the threads of the grains of the wood that goes down have to line up for his yard. I mean, he has a perfect yard.
He probably stripes his yard when he mows really well too.
He cuts it different directions every single time.
Yep. I think he and I could be best friends.
Yeah. Now, my yard, not so much, right? So I have a nice yard, don't get me wrong, but I pay somebody else to do it because I just don't want to do it. I have other things that are more important to me. So target market, call on me. I'm old enough that I feel the pain when I have to get down on my knees to spread the mulch. I don't want to have that big mulch pile piled up in my driveway. However, if I had my kids here, if my kids were still living with me, I'm not doing it. I'm making them do it, right? Or we're doing it together as a family outing or whatever, right? But, you know, one of them is filling up the wheelbarrow. Another one of them is carrying the wheelbarrow from one spot to the other. And somebody else is spreading it out on the ground, right? So we're doing tag team. We're doing teamwork. And we're making a game out of it or whatever. Also, not a great target market. So you can think about who in your bullseye, if you think of your bullseye with the middle of the target, the highest score of the bullseye, and then everything gets a little bit less important as you go out. So you got your perfect one in the middle. I would be a good one for a mulch guy. I'd be a really good one for somebody cutting grass because I don't like cutting my grass either. But I may not be a perfect one for trimming my shrubs, right? Because that might be a different thing. I may not be a perfect one for making sure that my windows are clean. Maybe I like to do that myself. So just because I'm perfect for one vendor doesn't mean I'm perfect for another. That's another thing to think about. But you really need to think about who is my perfect customer and then who is my second best perfect customer. Okay. And the way that you deliver that, the way that you understand that is you've done research on your market. You figured out who you've sold to in the past. That's your best indicator. You want to find those customers that have purchased from you before and then say, okay, how do I find more of him? I don't want to find more Brian's because Brian likes to do his mulch. He likes to do his yard. I want to find more Sean's. How do I do that? What's the difference between Brian and Sean? And then we target them. We identify them. We do studies about what that is. We figure out where they hang out on social media so we can target them more effectively. And Brian, you know all about going after people on social media and targeting your market. But identifying your target market is so important because if we go to the thing that we just talked about a second ago, where we understand the sales process, we want those people to be our leads, right? That perfect target market, because we know that in the sales process, we have to establish what is your as is and what do you want to be? What is your to be? And for me, there's a big to be for putting mulch down, but there's a lousy to be for you, maybe, right? Because you like to put down your own mulch.
For business owners who are just starting out, or even if you're already started out and you're having trouble identifying this, it's really simple to just jot down on a piece of paper or open a Google Doc and start typing out exactly what you do, you know, the various service, whether it's one or two or five or seven, whatever it is, and then create a list of, and you put it together in your mind, who is the ideal client that we serve? And if you have multiple, that's fine, right? So you just have ideal client number one, ideal client number two, number three. You don't want to have way too many or else you might be a little bit shiny object syndrome. But if you've done any research on this online, you'll know that it's called the client avatar, right? So you can go down a lot of different rabbit holes with this. But for me, in my experience, it was just as simple as, who do I serve? Okay, you can even give him a fictional name. John Smith. He runs a lawn care company. What's John Smith's biggest problem? He's having trouble getting leads. What's the biggest thing standing in his way from doing that? Well, he doesn't know how to do it, and he doesn't trust anyone to do it for him. Okay, so now you've identified their problems, who they are and their problems. Now talk about what type of, a little bit more detail on what their business is, where they hang out, who they talk to, who they serve. So just list these things out and just kind of let it free flow. Right, Sean?
That's right. That's exactly right. And look at your existing customers. So if you've already got some customers, figure out who loved what you did and then figure out, well, that customer didn't love it. That was more of a hard, it was harder to sell. It was harder for them to understand the value of what I did. Well, they're probably not perfectly in your target, right? They're not in the bullseye. They're not in the red. They may be in the second or third ring around the bullseye. So they're still a good customer, but they're not perfectly in your target. And you really want to know who is right and center, who is right in the middle. And then you can kind of go wider a little bit, but you really need to understand who is right in the middle of your target, right in the bullseye. And usually when I do a blog post on this, I usually have some type of picture of playing darts, because it's a perfect example of this is right where you want to be. You want to be right here. This is the sweet spot of who you sell to.
Yeah, it goes a long way, whether you're doing a B2B or B2C business. Even B2C, it might even be a little bit easier, because as you go out and start providing your service or your product, you'll start getting that feedback. Like Sean said, is you get the feedback of, oh, okay, well, maybe this customer wasn't quite as ideal. They paid their bill, but they really didn't need what we did, and they're probably not coming back. So maybe this is the type of person, whatever those qualities might be, that I don't decide to put advertising dollars to, or I don't put my time and energy into getting more of, because of however the job or the service, the product went in regards to them, it wasn't for them. So I think a lot of your market research can be easily had by just going out and doing the thing for multiple people and seeing what comes back.
And it can also be geographic in a sense as well. So I have a geographic territory for me, kind of. Brian, I think you also have a geographic where you like to be, because you can meet with them perhaps, or they're local to you, or they speak English. I mean, that's a big thing right there. I can't sell my product in another country because I can't speak that language. My product doesn't translate well. Those types of things makes a lot of sense. If I'm a plumber, then I'm drawing a circle around my shop and saying, this is the beginning of my target market, right? Because I can only travel so far, only want to travel so far with my truck in order to service a client. So yes, I can help a customer that is 1,000 miles away, but it's not really cost effective for me to do that. Customer is not going to be a very happy company when I start giving them the 65 cents a mile bill, right? So if that's the case, then maybe it's 25 miles around your shop or 50 miles around your shop. That's your target market. And maybe in the case of that plumber, okay, I need to be calling on company or buildings that have plumbing. So maybe I'm talking to an apartment owner, but probably not, because the apartment owner probably isn't calling me, or the apartment renter, I should say. The apartment owner might be, and his as is and to be may be pretty considerable. He might be saying, I don't want to deal with stopped up toilets from my renters. And my renters are always throwing toys down the toilet. They're throwing the wrong thing. They're not flushing just paper and things that came out of your body. And I don't want to deal with that, right? That my to be is, I don't want the middle of the night phone call. So Mr. Plumber, if you offer a to be that gets me, so I don't get that middle of the night phone call, or if I do, all I have to do is send a page to you or send a text to you, then that's a great to be. And that maybe that's a target market. I want all the apartment building owners within 25 miles of my shop that have more than 10 units in their apartment building, blah, 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 right? So, and the apartment building has to be a certain age. Maybe that's an issue I want to do. So I can target very specifically what is my perfect customer that I want to call on. Not that I can't help the other person, but what is perfect?
From the marketing perspective, once you hone in on this audience, or if you have multiples of these, now your messaging and your marketing material can really be painfully specific on who you're talking to and drilling down on their pain points. And like you said, giving them the to be. What is that? Selling the hole, not the drill, right? Like, let me show you how I can solve this headache of yours, this problem of yours. And now when you can speak specifically to that, you know, an apartment owner that owns 10 apartments that are all valued over $800 a month in rent, and they're on the east side of town, like, now you can talk directly to this person. So it makes all the difference in the world.
And that leads us right into the next topic for our conversation today, and that is crafting the value proposition. What is your value proposition? So if your value proposition is that I'll be able to unclog your toilet at 2 a.m. and I'm available on a text message, and all you have to do is sign a contract with me so that I'm on retainer, and I'll do retainer plus this, and every time I show up, it's a little bit more, but you know, you pay me every month and I'll just be there. You just text me and I just come. If that's your value proposition, that's a value proposition that is going after your identified target market and solves your to be and as is problem that we did in the first part of this conversation. Now you've got a value proposition that makes a lot of sense for that customer and for that need, right? So you figure out what the need is out there, that as is and to be, where do I want to be and where am I right now? Figure out who I'm going to sell that to, and then create your value proposition exactly to solve that problem. So that when somebody comes to you and says, well, what do you do, Mr. Plumber? I solve problems for apartment owners that don't want to have the 2 a.m. phone call about a stopped up toilet. That's my value proposition. And I do that on the east side of town. And I do that for apartment owners that are have more than 10 units in their building or whatever the case may be, right? So what do you do? In the case of the guys putting down mulch, I help elderly homeowners that want to have a beautiful yard. I help them create a beautiful landscape. I take care of their mulch. I deliver it. It's clean when I'm done. There's no stuff spread out all over the place. I trim all their shrubs. I take all the trimmings away. And when I am done at the end of the day, they have just a beautiful home. That's what I am. That's my value proposition. And I do that on the northern side of the town. And I promise a day that I'm going to deliver. And no matter what, rain, snow, whatever, I'm going to do it on that day because that's what I've committed for. And I have the best price on the market. You know exactly what you do that it satisfies the bullseye of your target market. And you know that it solves the problem that they have because they want to save change from wherever they are, their as is, to wherever their to be is, what they want to be like.
Yeah. So this can be, admittedly, for myself even, back in the day when I was trying to put these together, it can be difficult to simplify it to the point of, what do I do? What am I doing for my ideal customer? Do you have some advice for our listeners who want to be able to simplify this process to finding your unique proposition down to something as simple as a sentence or two?
Yeah. So there's this thing called ChatGPT. Start there.
There you go.
It's a great way to start. Ramble as much as you possibly can. Take all the marketing stuff that you've already done that's 2 pages too long. Take all of the emails that you've sent that kind of describe what you do or the proposal that you sent. Stick it in ChatGPT. Describe your business as best as you possibly can. Describe who your target market is. Describe why people buy from you, your as is and to be change, and then let ChatGPT come back to you and say, give me 2 sentences to explain what this is. And ChatGPT will give you a really good answer for this without any fuss at all. And then you can play with it, say, give me another variation, give me 16 variations of it. You can play around with it. You can combine variations. You can get something that is really very, very concise. ChatGPT is great and it's free, so just use it. Let artificial intelligence solve that problem. Don't try to be creative. Don't try to kind of lock yourself in your closet to try to figure it out yourself. Don't try to ask members of your church. Just let ChatGPT give you the answer. And it's probably going to be very, very close to being exact. And you start with that and then you tweak it and you say, you know, after using that for 6 months, it's not quite accurate again. But now you've got something to start with. And you can tweak it and fine tune it and make it a little bit better, change a couple words here and there. But all of that can go right on your copy of your website. It can go in your Facebook ads, your Google ads. And then you find out how do people respond to what I do? And then you can tweak it. You can make it better. And Brian, you know more about tweaking ads and tweaking content and copy better than I do. But start with whatever ChatGPT does it, because it's probably going to be really, really close.
Yeah, you know, cancel that darkness retreat and just get on ChatGPT. With the AI, the better your inputs, the better the outputs. But like Sean said, make sure you go in there and tweak it to the way you want it. ChatGPT is a perfect place to start and get all these thoughts that are bottled up in your brain. It gets them down into written form, and then it processes it so it can help you tweak it down or, you know, make it more digestible, get it closer to the thoughts that you kind of wish you had 10 minutes ago. But since we're human and it takes us a while, a lot of times to come around to that, AI is just going to spit it right out for us and then we can tweak it as we see fit. So that's a perfect example. I've used that many times to go from blank page syndrome to something on the page, and then it gets your creative juices flowing.
What do you try to sell to your prospects that this is where they are? This is the problem that they have. And describe the problem that they won't have when you solve the problem for them, where they're going to be, their as is to be, that delta. And the bigger that delta is, the better you are going to be at selling it. Describe who you're going to do that. That's your target market. And give that information to ChatGPT. Give them some examples of what you did at an existing customer. If you've had a couple of customers that it's been great, describe the customer. And then a little cheat that I learned a while back. say at the end of your, this is description of my problem in ChatGPT. This is what I'm trying to do. This is the information I can think of. The last sentence, put, feel free to ask me more questions to give me a better answer. And sometimes ChatGPT will say, you know, I'm a little confused. What do you mean by this? What do you mean by that? Describe this a little bit more to me. And so you do that, you answer that question, and then ChatGPT gives you an answer. And then you're really cooking on, what'd you say, cooking on peanut oil?
Yeah. Yeah, the robots are here, people. Let's use them to our advantage. There's no reason why we shouldn't. So I think that's a perfect place to bookend our first episode in the sales fundamentals that every business owner should adopt. Sean, before we send people off to part two, are there any parting words on part one to beat a dead horse with the word part?
So I'm going to end with what I started with, and that is sales is a continuous process of getting better. You are never as good as you can be in sales. Nobody ever is. You're just going to be good enough. So understand that you're going to go out there and you're going to do it. And now you have to do it a little bit better next time and a little bit better. You need to learn from your mistakes and learn from your successes. Learn from things that took too long or went too fast, because it is possible to go too fast. And learn from them and constantly be a student of this whole thing called sales. Because there is no such thing as perfection. There is no nirvana. There is no silver bullet except for work hard.
Yep. Educate yourselves. Go get the reps. Continue to get the reps. Learn from the reps and rinse and repeat. Right?
Exactly right.
All right. Beautiful. So that's a wrap on part one. Folks, we will catch you later in part two, where we are going to address developing key skills and strategies when it comes to the sales fundamentals. All right, Sean, we'll see you in part two. Alrighty, and that's a wrap on part one of sales fundamentals that every business owner should adopt. And we established your foundation of understanding your sales process, identifying your target market, and crafting a value proposition. I encourage you to really spend some time digging deep and understanding this process and applying it to your business and your specific situation, and then identifying that target market. We talked about it in the episode how it's vitally important that you know who you're talking to and how you can best talk to them so you can get the word out about your business and make those sales. And then, of course, having that value proposition really can't be understated. So thank you for joining us on this episode of the Millionaire University Podcast. I cannot wait to see you again for part two, where we're going to talk about developing the key skills and strategies when it comes to the sales fundamentals of your new business. All right, we'll catch you on the next one.